as the Sunday before Thanksgiving, there are things that are probably on your mind, so let's just acknowledge that they're there. You're possibly preparing shopping lists, knowing that there is much to be done. The house needs to be cleaned. If you're having folks over, somebody else is cleaning their house if you're headed their way. The grocery lists are getting longer and longer, and there's a chore list to be done, knowing that Thursday will be a day of good food and probably some decent football, maybe some arguments with family, and the day will end well. And as someone mentioned earlier, if you are traveling, go in with great travel mercies and blessings that you will have a most joyous Thanksgiving with family. As the Sunday before Thanksgiving, there are also some other points of convergence. It is the end of the Christian year calendar. Advent is the start of that calendar, so it's almost New Year's Eve in a way. Next Sunday is the first Sunday of Advent as we begin that season, expectant, waiting for God's promise to come toward us. It means that I'm not going to be preaching from Luke much longer. We'll hear a gospel reading from Luke on Christmas Eve, but we will be turning to another gospel writer in the coming year. And it is also the last point of convergence. It is Christ the King Sunday, the Reign of God Sunday, as it's known. Today, the church makes this affirmation above all other affirmation: Christios Kyrios, Christ is Lord. And if Christ is Lord, then his lordship and reign means that there are many other things and persons who are not in control. When I was a child, my grandfather had a coin collection. It wasn't huge. He wasn't out looking for rare pieces to add. It's just things that he had picked up here and there. Probably not rare, perhaps just difficult to come by. There were some Susan B. Anthony dollars that looked a little bit too much like quarters, and I understand they fell out of circulation. There were a couple of $2 bills. Lord only knows where he got them from. They're quite crisp. And there was a half dollar, I think from the late 60s, 1974, I believe. And it had a side profile. You've seen it. You've carried this coin in your hand before. It's the late President John F. Kennedy. And that coin, as big as it is, Kennedy's profile from the side takes up most of the front of this coin. And then right below his neckline, in very, very small text, is "In God We Trust." I don't know what you all actually use that coin for, perhaps buying soda pop or going to the movies, but it's a notable collectible coin. There's no mistaking that coin, perhaps for its size, but also if you've ever seen a picture of John F. Kennedy, you would know looking at this profile on the coin who it is. There's no mistaking it. Every single day, all around the world, as people pass currency back and forth, we hardly take stock of who is on the front of our currency. You may know who's on a $1 bill and $100. Five and tens and twenties are probably a bit more obscure. You may know that certain monuments adore our coinage. We have a lot of presidents, highly influential founding fathers, and a few notable women from American history, and a few more to come in coming years. As people go to the movies, pay for their tickets and their drinks, as they stop by the grocery store to pick up a few last-minute things before preparing dinner, they pass currency back and forth, hardly taking stock of who's on the front of it. But there's no way around it. Our lives depend on a stable dollar. There's no way around it. And one sign of a stable government is the production and the distribution of currency. It's so much depends on it. It carries so much power within it, the ability to distribute currency. Think back to your Sunday school days, or maybe a notable sermon. There's a story told in the Gospel of Mark about such an issue as currency. The Pharisees and the Herodians, those related and following Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great, they go and they seek Jesus out. He's teaching. And they say, is it legal? Is it appropriate? Is it a morally justifiable thing for us, as Jews living under Roman rule, to pay taxes or to pay a tribute, ransom money, per se, to Rome? And Jesus, wanting to answer the question appropriately, says, well, why don't you take some coinage out of your robe and whose picture is on the front of it? And it was Caesar's profile. And he says, notably, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render unto God what is God's. There's no tying of the tongue there. Jesus cleverly answers this question, and he avoids getting tied up and undermining Roman rule and getting caught in between a rock and a hard place. Had he said, render unto God all that you have, it would have been a little bit subversive. Rome probably would not have looked favorably upon such a sentiment. And Jesus would have been on the fast track to being dealt with in usual Roman style. What's notable on that coin, it was probably the profile of Tiberius, the son or the son-in-law of Caesar Augustus, the notable Roman emperor. And on that coin, much like Kennedy's, with a large profile, there would have been four initials carved into it. A D, an I, probably a space, a capital F, and a capital I. D-I-F-I. Divus Filius, Son of God, Son of the Divine One. Now things get interesting. Read the inscription again, or Jesus' sentiments. Render unto the Divine One, the Son of God, what is the Son of God's, and render unto God what is God's. And what's amazing about that perhaps a turn, is that everybody thought he was saying, pay taxes to Rome, establish them, give them what's due, and then give some to God. No, there is no loyalty due to Caesar at all. It's a play on words. But the Pharisees and the Herodians believed it all the same, and Jesus bought himself a little bit more time. This is not Jesus meek and mild making the most of the inscription on the coin. This is Jesus whose reign of God does not square with the destructive and the death-dealing policies of Rome. The inbreaking of the reign of God through Jesus' ministry exposes the violence and the tyranny of Rome. It exposes the preference of the crowds and those in authority to quiet the prophets, to make sure that their voices don't become too loud. Jesus is arrested, put on trial, and executed for this claim of being the Messiah, for establishing a new reign. And a new reign on the block means that Rome's totalitarian control might be no more. The reign of God in Jesus' ministry is bringing health to the sick, food to the hungry, bringing those that live on the most outer edges into the middle of the circle and saying that you have a home and you are beloved and nobody can tell you differently. Jesus' ministry is a great reversal. This is what the Beatitudes are, the blessings that are offered on the Sermon on the Plain in Luke's gospel. They are reversals. And I've told you before, depending where you are in a stacking order, you may not like a reversal very much at all. Here again, a few more verses, not from this morning's reading, there at the start of the 23rd chapter of Luke. It helps set the stage on how kingship, how the reign of God breaking into our midst is subversive at times, what implications it has, and how when those in power understand that there is a new rain breaking in through a thin place, that Jesus has to be executed in short order. This is the start of the 23rd chapter of Luke. Then the assembly rose as a body and brought Jesus before Pontius Pilate. They began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man perverting our nation, forbidding us to pay taxes to the emperor, and saying that he himself is the Messiah, a king." Then Pilate asked him, "Are you king of the Jews?" He answered, "You say so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I can find no basis for an accusation against this man." But they were insistent and said, "He stirs up the people by teaching throughout all Judea from Galilee, where he began." When Pilate heard this, he asked, "Is he a Galilean?" And when he learned that he was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him off to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that season. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had wanted to see him for a long time. Herod had heard about Jesus and was hoping to see him perform a sign. He questioned him at some length, but Jesus gave him no answer at all. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, accusing him. Even Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then he put on an elegant robe on him and sent him back to Pontius Pilate. That same day, Herod and Pilate became friends with each other. Before this, they had been enemies. Pilate then called together the chief priests, the leaders, and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as the one who was perverting the people, and here I have examined him in your presence and have not found this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back. Indeed, he has done nothing to deserve death. I will therefore have him flogged, and I will release him." And in ensuing moments, the crowd is not happy. They know that the claim that Jesus is the Messiah, the King, cannot stand, and they begin shouting for Barabbas. And Herod and Pontius Pilate soon have a crowd, if not a mob, on their hands, and Barabbas is released to quell their cries. The kingship of Christ, the reign of God in the world, it opens doors to justice that others would surely prefer remain closed. The reign of God in the world says to an individual with no community, "Come home. You have a place to dine at this table." The reign of God goes into shadow places where joy and hope and love are hard to come by. The kingship of Christ exposes the insanity of the patterns of violence that prevail all around the world and says no more. The reign of God can sound like children laughing alongside their adult tutors. And the adult tutor says, "You are somebody. You can be somebody. You are loved, and don't let anyone tell you differently." We're going to see the reign of God break through a thin place this weekend. We're going to swing the doors of this church wide open. We're going to get our best recipes, and the church is going to smell like fried chicken and brownies and string beans. And Lord knows what else y'all are going to bring, because you know how to cook so well. We're going to see the reign of God come and grow among us as we sit down at table with men whose names we don't yet know, but we will learn. And we'll know, we'll ask, "What is your story?" And then as they find shelter and a warm place to rest so that they don't have to be on the streets on a cold night, we'll begin thinking in our heart, there's something that's not quite right about this. And Lord willing, we'll ask, what conditions persist that maybe we've created them that land our neighbors on the streets? And perhaps an ember deep in your gut will turn into a blaze of fire, and you'll say that this can be no more. Neighbors living on the streets or living in decrepit conditions has no place in the reign of God. We cannot let it continue. The expressions of mercy and compassion and justice seeking that we do week in and week out, they're demonstrations of the affirmation that Christ is Lord. And if Christ is Lord and the reign of God is breaking in among us, then the world is going to be transformed. That's a promise. Next time we baptize someone, or someone makes their membership vows, they take them here at this chancel rail, I ask three questions. We ask these of our confirmands as they affirm the vows that their family took for them at baptism. There are three questions, and pay attention to the second one. Do you confess Jesus Christ as your Savior, put your whole trust in His grace, and promise to serve Him as Lord in union with the church which Christ has opened to all people, all ages, nations, and races? It's a question of loyalty. It's a question of service. Does your approach to life with your neighbors square with the reign of God in the world or the values of Rome? Where are your allegiances? How is it that you'll walk through the world this week? Will it be in a posture of demonstrating compassion and mercy? Will it be in a posture of looking for cracks in the ground, expectant that the reign of God will break through like a weed in a sidewalk? No matter its obstacles, it will bring forth life and new fruit. Will you walk through the world as a demonstration that the life best lived is in the full love of God and your neighbors? Let us make the affirmation that Christ is Lord. Bless you in the name of the everlasting God. Amen.